The plunge is always scary, but taking it always pays off. So without succumbing to fear, let's dive in.
We're back.
I didn't get to say it right. He skipped my cue.
I thought you were snoozing on it a little. I think it's good to jump in while the music is still fading out.
All right.
And then there you go.
We're back. Next time I'm just going to jump in and say we're back. So we tentatively came back last time on the rocks. It didn't feel so much like being back because we were on the rocks. We had never been there before.
Yeah, but maybe that's the purpose of these conversations, to go to places where we haven't been. Should we just keep rehashing the same place?
Right, I hear that. Fine, but it felt like a season premiere, but as I tried to bill it, but also like not as a season premiere.
Yeah, it was definitely a non-traditional or a non-core, so it felt different to us. It's sort of like a episode 3, we go on an adventure, not episode 1.
Yeah. So I think that we're going to call this episode 1A.
And that one is episode 1 or episode 1B?
Yeah, 1. This is an irrational number that lies between episode 1 and episode 2. Yeah.
This is there are rational numbers that lie between there, though.
Bert and I just had a math lesson where he taught me about rational and irrational numbers. It was quite impressive.
Yeah. The mysterious functions of mathematics.
Yeah, it was really cool. I hope to bring those lessons to the public at some point. I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking that also. Like as I was thinking about this lesson, I started getting excited about it, and I was like, okay, this will be lesson 1, but there's going to be a way to refine this lesson to create a new approach to mathematics, I guess, or to this field of mathematics, at least.
Very cool. It was really unbelievable. I loved it. So that was so back to the cold plunge, episode 1A. I think yesterday I had a moment of clarity about what the podcast is, and I think that I've been confused about what is the podcast and what's its role, and trying to understand where the podcast fits into the greater canon of artistic, things. So I think that the podcast at its core focuses on two things. Ben Adam Lamakom, Ben Adam Lachavero. Lamakom, Ben Adam Lachavero, where Ben Adam Lachavero is like the adherence to the mitzvah almost. So I guess it doesn't get split so evenly, but it's almost mitzvah and philosophy. So one is tracking our adventures in following commandments and creating commandments and seeing the way that it works on our life in almost like an optimization kind of way, for our health and things like that. And then the other side of the coin is our philosophical meanderings and explorations. And I think that's a key word, that it's not the place for the polished philosophical and spiritual ideas that will create other channels, hopefully, for other forms to put them out, things that are polished. This is a podcast. It's not polished. We don't know. We're looking for the ideas, and this is the process of finding ideas.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. This is, I view it as a sandbox. And we get to come in here and play around, and we have the philosophical part. And even when we deal with the actual mitzvah, the Ben Adam L'Chaveró part, the implementable part, even that, when we're in here looking at it, we're not doing them right in this moment, but it's also a sandbox. How can we refine? How can we change? How has this been working? And it's useful to the listener to hear us play in the sandbox, because rather than just consuming a lesson that someone else made for them, this sandbox, when as they watch us play, it's an invitation for them to play in the sandbox too. They hear the ideas as they're created, and so if they want to challenge them in their head or come up with new derashot, they can as they listen, as opposed to someone just saying, this is the message. And I think that's why we like listening to podcasts, because when they show you their thought process as opposed to just their product, it invites us to think as well.
Beautiful. Well said. We don't know the message here. This is just us looking, us searching, and us bringing you some things, but in a looser form.
Yeah, I mean, we find things in the sandbox a lot of the time, and then you get to see the message that's found in real time, and that's exciting too.
All right, good. So now that we've established the role and the need for the Cold Plunge podcast, I hope to be here with you all more frequently.
Yeah, definitely more frequently than we've been here, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so what's where to next?
Where to next? I don't know where we should go, but maybe in the spirit of being in a sandbox, we should try playing with things that we normally wouldn't play with or something.
Okay.
I don't have anything in mind, though. I'm just...
just something that we wouldn't normally play with. Or we could break down the things that we've been playing with. Like, we've had such a jam-packed week in terms of ideas that we've been working through.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, we could do that. That's a good one also.
So, like, we did... we had Yom HaShoah this week. And yeah. Then we had Earth Day. I feel like it's really great that the calendar is littered with these different opportunities and invitations to explore. It's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's great. Should we just dive in? Start with one of the days.
Yeah, I'm most on Earth Day because
just did Earth Day. Yeah,
yeah, that was yesterday.
Okay. I'm a huge fan of the Earth, obviously. Although maybe it's not such a trivial statement. I guess a lot of people perhaps aren't huge fans of the Earth. I was saying yesterday to someone, like, do you ever feel when you step out of your house that you're sort of stepping into your true home? As you leave that door, you're really entering into your real home. And I know a lot of people probably don't see it that way, and I don't even fully see it that way. But as a species, it is our home.
Right. We both have a natural predilection towards nature. I wonder if that's it doesn't seem to be as universal as we'd expect, given the degree of ours.
Yeah, I like, yeah, sometimes just assume that, yeah, that's how we're wired. Wouldn't everybody like to get into the forest for a hike? And like, a lot of people are like, no.
Yeah, exactly. They don't like it at all. And I find it so calming, so soothing. The other day, before I knew it was Earth Day, just coincidentally, I surfed, so that's obviously very connected with the earth. And then I came home, and we've been working on our garden, I think, because it's like a natural thing to do now. So I was aerating the grass, sprinkling seeds out on the grass, and then I found out it was Earth Day, and I was like, oh, this is just perfect.
Yeah, that's great. I wish I had more space. I have to start gardening somewhere.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. On Sunday, I sawed down some of the limbs off the trees. I got a nice blister from it.
Oh, wow, from holding that saw and just keep going at it.
It's a massive saw. It's like a 30-foot one because you're sawing things very high. And then once I had to get onto this ladder and saw while I was on the ladder through a very thick piece, and it was quite scary.
Crazy. And you were sawing the trees down for their health, or they were overbearing on the property?
Yeah, some combination. Well, I was just taking off dead limbs, and I kept yelling that. I only took off dead limbs so far because everyone was like, oh, don't take off too much. I was like, I didn't take off too much. I took off the dead limbs, okay? I didn't even start thinking about cutting his live limbs yet.
Yeah, as a bonsai owner, or maybe we shouldn't say owner, maybe we should say roommate. You room with a bonsai. You live with one of them. Do you, and care for it. Do you think you're able to approach trimming the trees with a better outlook?
Yes, but it's a completely different ballgame because the bonsai, you're looking at it and you see the whole picture right in front of you, and it's much easier. Whereas the tree, you can't even see. You can't even understand the picture from all of its angles. And I think that makes it very challenging.
Yeah. Okay, I like that. I'm thinking that, like, in front of our house, we should get... I was just like, as I'm walking, I see like people have these trees that aren't too large, and like our front lawn sort of just has nothing in it, just grass. Like, we could put a cherry blossom tree there. They don't get too big. And every spring it's beautiful. And then after spring, it has the nice green leaves. It's just a pretty tree.
Yeah. And trees in nature generally do pretty well for themselves. Like, they'll find the shape for some reason that it's harder for the bonsai to find at home, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, the bonsai won't die if you don't trim it.
No, it'll just get, it won't find the natural tree shape, or it'll take it much longer to find the natural tree shape.
Yeah.
So you're like, there you're expediting it here. Whereas in nature, the sun moves, it's just naturally, you know, making it make sense in terms of a shape.
Yeah. I was reading something fascinating about trees, that if a forest hasn't been logged, like the trees haven't been cut down in a long time, I think like 100, 200 years, there's actually no greenery that grows on the bottom of the forest floor. It's like we've gone on hikes and like there are those vines and things that sometimes you have to step over, and that's because the trees have been cut down recently, or maybe they're like newer growth from a meadow that was created at some point from maybe the mushrooms underneath, the fungus underneath. But it sort of makes sense. Like when we're in a clean forest, we know it just seems healthier and maybe it's more stable. It's been there for longer.
Interesting. Right. So the stuff that grows on the ground, you're saying, that none of that would grow because what, the forest would lock it out. All the trees would just be body to body.
Yeah, I guess the trees have been there so long that they sort of cover the canopy and there's just the sunlight goes to the trees.
Right. Interesting. So all these other growths are product of human, and those are the things that we might not like, the growths.
Yeah, like I think they're the things when we walk in a forest that we might think are more ugly. Not that they necessarily are, but that's at least just our instinctual reaction. And for the most part, I mean, there are other ways that a forest can clear out and have new growth, but many times it's a product of humans going in and cutting down trees.
Yeah, it's funny when you start manipulating the nature, like who you ally with. So like grass is now one of our allies, but we don't like the moss. So we're going out and raking out the moss and putting more grass in the holes and trying to cultivate the growth of the grass. And it's just funny because like we have a vision of what we want the garden to look like. And it could be a beautiful vision. And it's, you know, just, I guess, an interesting thing where you're actually playing with the nature itself as opposed to, like, just eradicating the nature and putting up a completely man-made.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the natural systems, which are, like, if we don't interfere, they're sort of sustainable. So we put the grass, and we have to constantly be raking it, and, you know, now we have to step into the game consistently to keep our vision in continuity. But sometimes, I mean, men make these systems also. You see, like, sometimes you'll see YouTube videos of people making like a self-sustaining fish tank or something. But in nature, it is just natural. Like that forest without the growth on the bottom, it just stays that way. And that's just what it is.
Right. As you tweak, as you want something from it, then it could start to become frustrating to you.
Yeah, because you risk disturbing the balance when we get involved.
Yeah. So I've been thinking a lot about the earth. The other thing that I've been doing is reading Steinbeck, and he loves East of Eden. You know, they're farmers, and they have this massive property that the guy buys that he has this vision of turning into Eden, spawned by a love, and then as the love falls apart, he loses any will to turn it into Eden.
Wow.
And so he lets it just, like, turn into a jungle.
Crazy.
Yeah, and then there's like the capitalist drives to turn it into a place to sell tobacco or whatever it is. Like, let's just turn it. This is a big amount of property, fertile land. You know how much you could do with this. But then there's also just like, so that's one thing, to work the land, and you hear that. And the man who, you hear like the way they know every inch, a good farmer knows every inch of his property. You know, he has this crazy connection with it.
Yeah.
And in some ways, the farmer seems a little cruel that he's exploiting the land in terms of what he wants from it, and maybe he was letting it turn into Eden by not doing anything, but it didn't seem that way.
Yeah, his vision of Eden was not the jungle, and no one around wanted the jungle.
And no one wanted him to be lazy. No one wanted him to lose his vision and his inspiration.
Yeah, that's maybe the biggest blow of them all, that he had such a grand vision and he lost it.
Yeah, and the land is supposed to gift you that, like other people were able to see the land and be inspired to work it. And it almost felt like he wouldn't work it, you know, and that's, it was like to buy this plot of land and leave it untouched was almost an insult to the land as opposed to a compliment. So it's like a weird
point. Yeah. But once the land gets developed, then the source of inspiration is gone. And maybe by keeping it there, everyone sees it and gets inspired, and they want to do something to the land, but they can't. And then they go and find something else to do. And it's just a muse.
Right, or they find their own plot of land and start working it.
And I guess we sort of do that, right? We have the parks and people go into the wilderness and then they come back and add to society in new and creative ways.
Yeah. How'd you like my Earth Day poem?
It was beautiful. I like that you wrote about the earth the way we all feel about it, but also, you know, used a fiction as the lens and stepped back into a time where we're actually even more exposed to the elements, but and yet it's still entirely relevant. It doesn't matter that we don't live in the forest and get eaten by wolves. So I liked it.
Yeah, I tried to deal with the fact that, okay, we love the earth, or some people don't, but I love the earth, right? And that's my natural inclination, is to love it. And everyone's posting pictures, I love the earth, beautiful pictures, which, yeah, okay, it's true. I love the earth. The pictures are beautiful. They were inspiring me, you know? And they're what reminded me that it was Earth Day, so I was grateful to social media for doing that. But also, like, it's such a lack of nuance, that portrayal, because the reality is that as much as we love Earth, we've chosen to build houses and to, in many places, eradicate the Earth, in other places, to exploit it. And even then, the narrative becomes like, oh, bad humans. You guys have exploited the Earth, you know? But, like, what? It's easy to say that from behind a thing, but what are you willing to give up? Like, do you want to live in the cold? You know, and to think of Earth as our complete ally, this beautiful, blissful place to live in, when in reality the Earth struck first in a certain sense, right? Like, first of all, the Earth is the one who birthed us, and we have so much to be grateful for, and I'm not questioning that. You know, and all of the materials that we live off of are there. They're its streams. And its ability to produce food, I mean, it's our mother, our compassionate and loving mother. But on the other hand, it's almost a cruel father figure in its teachings that it hits. And sometimes it doesn't even seem like it hits with any fairness. I hit the flood, you know, the Noah's flood. And I said my father told me that it was because they were bad. They did something bad. But I don't know if that's true. Like, or it's just a crazy, cruel, or uncaring earth. You know, and dealing with understanding that part of the picture also, that we built these houses to protect ourselves, that we needed shelter, that we needed food, that if you want to have those beautiful children that you love and you want to feed them, then you need to find a way to feed them and use the earth for it.
And even just birth them safely. Like how many people would die in childbirth? How many women would also die in childbirth? And there's so many interesting things there. But one, to go to one, I think there's a nuance in maybe what I think the climate change, the protect the earth perspective should be, but isn't. And it's that the earth is fine. Like, the earth is here, and it really just represents existence in a way. And if we dig a hole in the ground that's so large that it ends up swallowing us up, just give the earth not even so much time compared to its time. Like, give it, like, at most a million years, probably less, and, like, everything will be it's going to be the earth.
Even if we nuke the whole earth.
Yeah, maybe it'll take a little more time, but it will be the earth, and it will be fine. The only problem is that the hole might swallow us up. We might build so much that it crumbles on ourselves. And so that's really the concern. Not that we damage the earth permanently, but that we damage the earth permanently from our perspective. So we damage it so much that either as long as we continue to survive, we're living in a bleak, bleak world, or even worse, we drive ourselves to extinction by draining the world of resources or just nuking each other.
Right, so let's not pretend it's so magnanimous, our earth protection. It's from our own utility, we have to treat it in a way that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. And the earth has no care. The earth is just the earth. We're the ones that care. And we love the earth and we care for it, but we're caring for it for ourselves because we care for it and because we live in it and we need it to be livable and we need it to be a beautiful place because humans need beauty. And if we eradicate all the beauty, I'd imagine that we would become worser people.
And it's also a certain amount of, like, kafui tov, like, to have something that gives so much and to not be able to love it. Like, I think there's a certain – first of all, I want to understand that the running from nature, the people that we see around us that don't like nature, that's completely understandable given our history with it, you know? So like, that's something that we have to understand, you know, and that that is a real force, because the world was dangerous and the people that loved it, you know, didn't always do, you know, so well. So that's one. And then once you understand that and you understand that there's a genuine source for some of the animosity, you know, in the same way anyone looks at their parents and realizes, like, listen, they there was some things that they did to you that, that did cause trauma. That's fair to see. It would be blind not to see it. But on the other hand, there's so much good that the earth did to you. And to discount that part of the conversation is silly also. But you can only get to that place and show someone that once you explain that, listen, your fear of it, of the bugs and of the sun and of the cold, that's all very normal. That was important. You needed to have all those fears because this thing is callous in a way that you can't imagine. But also now that you're powerful, and I was saying that last night, that in any relationship, if one of the parties is too powerful, it doesn't make for a good relationship. You know, it's usually an exploitative relationship. And historically, the earth has been too powerful. Man was at its whim. And how can we have a relationship with this thing? We're just afraid of it or trying to fight it. Now we've gotten to a point where the scales have somewhat become even and where if we wanted, we can nuke the whole earth and, I don't know, possibly eradicate it, you know, if we tried. And so that would only just take care of the earth, and the galaxy still would be uncaring as to that. But now that the scales are balanced, now you could look out and have genuine love for it in a way.
Yeah. I also think it brings us to the other point that I was thinking about that I was sort of going to table, but we're here now. A lot of people run away from the earth, but it's not possible to run away from the earth. Like, nature claims all, and ourselves, we aren't part of nature. We're part of earth, and the concrete jungle that we made is part of earth, and it's natural because that's what nature produced. And you see that, right? Like, as advanced as we are, nature is going to claim our lives, whether it comes from cancer or the failure of our cells to continue to reproduce. That's nature inside of us showing its hand.
Right. We are nature.
Yeah.
The nature lives in us.
We're not gods on earth. We're products of nature, maybe the finest, maybe not. And so we are nature. It's inside of us at all times. And you can't run away from it. But you can sort of dance with it more gracefully in a way.
Right? You could extend your life. You could.
Yeah. Right. So exactly. You could surf the wave well, or
and we
could
cure
out
the virus, and that would be like a whoa, they jumped in and they were able to do that, you know, and that was a question. Like, anyone who is all pro nature, like, oh, anti vaxxers, this, that, and the other, like, you know, okay, now you don't want the doctor to save you, you know, you don't want nature, pure nature. You want man's combination with nature, and you want to. But then the other side, like you're saying, is like this idea that we're going to move into this hyperspace, especially with the internet now, like where we're going to live in the headset. And I think our bodies are going to end up, they're just going to take out whatever it is that's us and try to put it in a tube and let our bodies lay in this thing and get it its exercise and try to create a new nature. That's basically what it is, right? That we want to create a new world, a new nature. That this, we looked at this world and this world was beautiful, but also was cruel to us in ways that we don't want. And we want to see if we could create a world without cruelty and what would happen, without death, and what would happen without suffering, and what would happen. And it could be that we're so much a product of nature that we wouldn't accept it, and that we're just going to build a worse version of the earth in these places, where it's possible that we could build something really special from our perspective. And I guess that's really the challenge that lies ahead.
Yeah, I think that's great. We're trying to separate ourselves from the cruelty of nature. And probably our biggest challenge in that has been that as we've, you know, moved on in this process, we probably realize more and more that the cruelty also lies within ourselves.
Our own nature.
It's in our own nature. And so we can't just change our environment. You can't just put yourself in Gan Eden and everything's going to be okay. We need to change ourselves.
And the only environments we want are the ones that are have the cruelties because we become addicted on them. Like you go to social media and then we create the same cruelty and the same patterns as existed outside because we have that nature within us too, because we are callous towards weakness, or we can be, in the same way that the nature would be, right? Because that seems like a cruel thing, right? The nature sees this town that's sitting on its edge and they're not prepared, and boom, it wipes them out. And we've done that also because we are nature and we don't want to be that. There's parts of us that we see that disturbs us. I think to bring it to Yom HaShoah, you know, you had these Germans who thought that they were purifying the genetic pool. They were nature. You know, they argued it scientifically. We have this species who they're polluting this planet, and they didn't realize that they were the ones who were succumbing to the part of nature that we want to eradicate, not us. That the weakness is not the thing.
They were polluting the planet with cruelty. It's great. And I guess it's maybe a message. If you think you can escape from nature, you have to realize that the escape doesn't mean going into a room behind walls. The escape means, you know, escaping your own cruelty, and not even cruelty to others, even cruelty to yourselves. You know, there are times when people berate themselves, ourselves, with thoughts or whatever. So,
yeah, that whatever we deal with in the outside world, we still need to find a way to deal with inside, the nature that lives within us. And that's going to be the even more challenging part, because we are products of this world, and to dismiss what we see in it as cruel, you know, and then not to realize that we're just doing the same thing, that in the same way that the strongest tree shoots through, we're doing the same thing with the strongest human. And so maybe we there's no escaping it, or maybe there's a world that's yet to be built.
Yeah. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But
also, if we are able to build the Gan Eden, right, the garden, it means that Earth all along was truly good because it was able to spawn this product. And if we are not capable, then it means that Earth was as we suspected.
Yeah, yeah, that's funny. If it's there, it's not of our creation; it's of nature's creation.
Correct.
Yeah, and if we can't find it, it doesn't mean it's not there. But if in theory we can know for sure it doesn't exist, if we could prove that it doesn't exist, if we could prove that the square root of 2 is not rational, then we have to know. Then we know it's shown, as opposed to just keep trying and not knowing. Is it there or is it not?
So that's like the study of philosophy, that if we know that God is good and God is one and God is at the core, then we're going to build the garden, and that it started with the garden, then we're going to and we have to build the garden, because that is, even if we are not a part of it, the garden will be built. And if it's not there at the core, you know, what was that explosion of energy, you know?
Yeah. And I think coming inside to, has been good work for us, at least because it's highlighted the problem. Like we've separated ourselves from nature so much that now we sort of have to come to terms with the fact that we're just as cruel as nature is. And so it's step one in a very long process. It's helped us at least identify the problem, and only when you identify the problem can you start working on a solution.
And yet the ancient religions knew it to a certain extent.
Yeah.
That the problem was internal. That's what all of them are trying to deal with, that it's a connection. The problem is is internal. There's something in you that needs to be addressed. And it's a disconnection in some ways. That's the issue. They don't see it that the earth was the problem, though. I don't read many things that see it that way. Right. Well, that's the question. Is there something special about us that's problematic? A special problematic that the earth is really good, or are we just as problematic as the earth itself?
Well, yeah, it's tough to say. Like, we don't actually know that the earth is problematic, but it is going to, regardless of what our philosophical viewpoint is and how we see ourselves, the earth is going to kill us.
Right.
At least unless you think you can spiritually transcend or metaphysically transcend. But it seems that the earth still is going to kill us. And the question really is that bad? And it seems like such an absurd question to ask. Of course it's bad. And I think that's the challenge. It's that we know the difference between good and bad. And that's the struggle that mankind has been dealing with, since we ate the apple.
And then you look at a moment like the Holocaust, where you could clearly see, the evil, and it highlights the idea like that we had World War I, World War II, right? That these are not Earth problems. These are far worse than Earth problems in a certain sense, and far more troubling because they're from humans. And if you can't trust humans, you'd love to see, right? We hit this with Steinbeck last time, right? That man versus the Earth. Versus the sun, life versus non-life, now life versus life. Realizing that life and non-life, there's less distinction between life and non-life, that we are really more of the same.
Yeah, Jordan Peterson breaks it down beautifully. If a wolf eats a sheep or lamb, we don't think it's cruel, we think it's tragic. But if a human goes and kills the sheep and eats it, maybe some will disagree with that, but if a human goes and kills another weaker human for whatever purpose, that is cruel. And so it's because of our awareness, because that we know that things can be good or bad, that make our actions so cruel. Because like, how can you do that while knowing that certain things are good and certain things are bad? How can you kill the other human when you also know that killing the other human is bad? And it just makes it so much more sad that we can still be just as tragic as nature while knowing that the tragedy is in fact cruelty.
Right. Will the awareness allow us to transcend our nature, or is the awareness present in all of nature and yet it still does all those things? Maybe the wolf has the same awareness and he also, right? So are they part of the ultimate transcendence? That's like that the sheep will lie with the wolf.
Yeah. I guess it's funny, like going back to the eating the apple, you would think man eats the apple, they know the difference between good or bad. That's not going to take them out of Gan Eden. That's going to bring them into Gan Eden.
Right.
And yet really it just created the concept of cruelty.
Right. There wouldn't have been cruelty if not for eating the apple, because is it cruel to do something that you don't know is wrong? It's not.
Yeah.
All right. Turn the page on the philosophical meanderings to the more practical, because I think that's the Cortexian part of our podcast, like what the workflows are like and what's going on. And so this has been, for me, a time of a lot of growth. A lot of the systems that I wanted to see in my life are suddenly taking hold, I guess, because of, in lieu of all the other noise that was pulling me away from being able to make them. So should we whip out my Omer journal?
Yeah, we should. I've seen glimpses of this journal of yours, and it seems fascinating. Yeah, you gotta show it to us, or at least explain what it is. I don't know if we can show it.
Why didn't the recording stop? Because maximum intensive storage is full. That's gonna be a real issue for me, though, matching up and stuff. Okay. This is my Cortex theme journal.
Okay.
The Me Journal.
The Me Journal, the Theme Journal, both.
The Theme Journal. And here it is. And these are my colored pencils to start doing it better.
Okay. So I remember first looking at this journal when it didn't have any writing on it. And we'll upload a picture of the blank page to the user and your page.
Yeah, we could also show it on the, if you're watching this, we've become high tech, hopefully.
So that is what the blank page looks like. And I saw that and I was completely lost. Like, what is someone supposed to do with this? Is it a checklist of sorts? What's with the lines in the circles, and what's with the gray area and then the white area in the boxes on top? But like, okay, I could sort of use it as a regular checklist, but like, what's with all the lines? Do they have some sort of function? And looking at your page now, it seems that you figured out some sort of system.
I have.
So you have, I guess, your daily tasks going across. So like we said, like that's the checklist intuition. That sort of makes sense. And you've broken down the circles, according to the line, into two semicircles. And then you have two dates, the Hebrew date and the English date, or the Omer counting?
The Omer counting and the English date.
Okay.
That's... So the Omer counting, we have the Omer counting now, and it just happened after HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim Rosh Chodesh. And what happened? New Year, right? So what happens after New Year's on New Year's?
Party.
And then?
Yearly resolutions.
And challenges, right? Oh, I got to go on a 10-day streak, a 20-day streak, a 30-day streak.
Okay.
And we have it built in, the New Year's, into the count. It's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. I like that.
So I said, perfect. The perfect time. We're counting the days. We're also in the quarantine, so we're counting days. Like, wow, day 14, day 15. Day. I wish I was counting from the beginning of the quarantine. Okay. Yeah. It's like a cool thing. Day 16. Today is, you know, as we're recording this, today is the 14th day.
Of the Omer. Not of the quarantine. What day is it of the quarantine?
We don't count that.
I should count. I'm going to start counting that. I need to find out. I'm going to calculate it.
And so, listen, it's from when you start counting, really. The count starts when you start counting. You can't go back and count something you weren't counting.
But in this case, it doesn't matter that we weren't counting, because our life has actually changed. So to say, like, wow, we've been quarantined for 46 days or whatever the number of days is.
So regardless, so we're counting days, and so I'm counting tracking hobbies. So what I did with the circles is I split them into two halves, because there are certain activities that they go hand in hand, right? So I have these meditating and praying. I want to do both every day, right? I think that they're different activities. And yet, if one day I miss one of them, okay, so at least the circle's half full, you know, so it doesn't look like I've abandoned the habit. I'm still doing it, but I haven't, right? So the first one's meditate, pray. You have any further clarification on those two?
Yeah, so what exactly is praying to you, and what exactly is meditating?
There's obviously a gray area there, but praying is the traditional Jewish prayer, the process of trying to come into conversation with the source.
Okay.
Which is a different practice. And then there's meditating, which it could be anything, really. I'm pretty loose with that term. But if I, you know, turn on a timer, shut my eyes, then I meditated.
Yeah, okay. That sounds fair.
Then the next is listen/visit call. This is interesting too. So visit is more obvious. I think it's a good time for everyone to go visit friends, visit loved ones, or not physically, but via the Zoom or phone call. It's a good time to call your grandparents. So I want to do one of those a day at the minimum. It's a low bar. And then listen, this is more challenging. I've noticed personally, it could be my own flaw, that during conversations, a lot of the times I'm thinking about what I'm going to say next that the whole time. And I'm like almost just having the conversation. It's like a masturbatory conversation, you know? I'm not trying to engage with them. I'm really just self-pleasuring in their presence. And so I want at least every day one moment where I really listen and just try to understand. So I try to do that once a day as like a reminder. And hopefully it becomes more of a conversational habit to me, because I do think listening is such a kindness. And also it'll be better for my conversation. I'll learn more.
Yeah. When I read listen, I was interested. At first, I couldn't figure it out, and then that's what I guessed. I was going to jump in with the guess that this is what it is, and I was like, oh no, I have to listen.
Nice. You're a good listener, though.
Yeah, I guess. But I identify with that a lot also. I find myself talking when I should be listening all the time, and I try to just listen. It's hard to actively listen. Like, I can listen, I can let the other person talk and, like, hear them, but to then add to the conversation with words but not hijack it is very difficult.
Yeah,
like those people that can just find a few words to say that are speaking in a way that is listening.
Yeah, I've noticed that with my class. I teach a class, and sometimes there's people at the class who whatever I say, they're taking it somewhere completely different, and it's like, wow. And then there's some people who they just add a nugget that takes it and takes it to the next step, and it's like, oh wow, they were really there.
Yeah, that's good. I think we do that a lot. We hear a derasha and we try to make it our own.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it's sort of a little disrespectful. Like you said, their derasha wasn't enough. Also, even if you hear a derasha that you already heard, you go like, oh yeah, I know. Is that just my ego trying to say like, yeah, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
I know that. I'm smarter than you, man.
Right.
And so like, maybe we're just supposed to be like, wow, that's beautiful. Even if we heard it before, because we do agree that it's beautiful. It's honest. It's not like lying to say that. It's just not getting your ego involved.
So one thing in the way of listening, I think meditation helps, but have you been doing the poems on waking up, the white poems?
I haven't been.
Oh, they're powerful.
Really?
Oh my God. We should just stop the whole recording. If you're listening to this and you haven't listened to that and you have the waking up app, he reads these crazy poems and they're boom. They hit you right in the...
Yeah. And if you don't have the waking up app and you want it, hit us up. We can send you a free month.
True.
And when that expires, we can probably send you another free month.
Right.
So,
and you could ask Sam and it will be free for you.
Yeah, alternatively, yeah, you can reach out to them and ask for a free version.
But yeah, so they read these poems and it's like he's taking you on a journey with words. And the question is, are you willing to completely go? It's obviously meant to be you on his journey, which is going to bring things up in you. But do you get lost or are you able to stay with it?
Yeah. Okay. That sounds good. And I think that's when you enjoy art in general, at its greatest level, when you can, go on their journey and not make it your own journey.
Yeah. And they invite it to make you it your own. Like we said on this podcast that we're on this journey, but we are inviting you openly to, while we're talking, go think about these different ideas in your life, obviously. And these poems in particular are begging you to hear the silence and hear the questions. One of them, oh my God, he's taking you through the forest, and then the forest starts asking questions of you, and you gotta listen to it.
Wow.
Okay, so then I have read, study, and learn Torah on the next bubble.
Okay, what's the difference between those two?
So just the traditional definitions, that reading and studying is I'm on my Kindle, or today we did a math lesson, that definitely covers it. And learning Torah would be traditional Torah sources, connecting with what would be colloquially described as Torah learning.
Okay, so it's sort of like a secular and then traditional divide.
Correct. Even though, again, it's in the same bubble. And that's the point with all these, that we understand that the bubble is one, really, at its core. But making the divide, I find, is helpful because, I don't know, they could say, I want to learn those sources also. I want to be well-read in those sources also. So it's just...
Yeah. Yeah, they're two sides of the same coin, but sometimes just seeing the coin as a coin is not giving you the full picture. You have to look at each of the sides to see the full coin, and so maybe that's sort of what you're doing.
Yeah, Mofo gave us that two sides of the coin. That was beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I think you touched on it too in your Earth Day poem.
Yeah.
That was your point, that mm-hmm. it's two-sided.
Yeah, true. It was inspired by his poem. Okay, the next one, sleep by 11:30, up by 8. I changed that now to sleep by 10:30, in bed by 10:30. I don't do sleep anymore because it's too strict.
It's also sort of not possible. Like, that's where sort of the lack of free will is most obvious. Mm-hmm. You can't choose to fall asleep. You just do. You can try. You can set yourself in a good situation for it. But still, if you can't fall asleep, you can't fall asleep.
Exactly. Up by 8. I've been trying to get up before 8, but that's good. That's fine for me. And that's been very helpful. And the morning gatherings and evening gatherings have been like really adding the ritual to that.
Yeah, I've been getting up early also, only in like the last week, and I love it.
It's great.
When I, like, if I wake up early and I go downstairs and there's someone already down there, I sort of get frustrated. Like, they stole my silence, my peace that I was waking up early for.
Okay, you got up like 4.
Yeah.
Art made, art released. That's great. Okay,
yeah.
That's great. Every day make, every day release. I feel like we're in that kind of time period where it's just about releasing. I think there was once a day where you work on your masterpiece and then put out only masterpieces. And I feel like it's a, at least for me, this has been better. Release things. No one cares anyway. You could put out a masterpiece and no one would find it.
Yeah. Well, I think working on the masterpiece is actually extremely similar to this. And the reason we have trouble working on masterpieces is because we don't see it like this. Like, we see, okay, you have to work on a masterpiece, and it's this problem that we don't even know where to start. It's just undoable. Like, how do you go about it? But when you break down your masterpiece into just like, and it's probably the same in business too, like, just every day have something that you want to do and complete that task. So like, if you're working on a beautiful masterpiece and today you're just coloring in the apple in the painting, that is a task for the day and you're going to complete it. And if it's only, if maybe the task of the day is only choosing the color.
That's when it's all on one canvas.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a distinction, but I think that this approach, I mean, in a way you could say it's all on one canvas, right? One YouTube channel, one whatever it is.
Right. Or maybe one day the masterpiece comes out because of all the reps that you gave yourself. And like, but I feel like each one's a masterpiece on its own. Like, I wrote the poem. I think that was a masterpiece. I could be wrong. I feel like I'm Steinbeck already, you know? I'm like, yeah. I already wrote my masterpiece, but I know that I'm just going to keep getting better and that it was like the first poem I ever wrote.
Yeah. And I think as you create these works of art, like, I'm sure you find your masterpiece in a way. You find what you want to really perfect. Like, you write that poem, and if that poem was your masterpiece, you would keep coming back to it and refining it. And you would be obsessively perfectionist about it.
Right, everywhere.
You don't need to be obsessively perfectionist about all your creations. They're sort of just getting you in that place, and they're also good works on their own.
Mm. True. Nice. Okay, good. So Art Made, Art Released. And art, if you know, this podcast I view as art, contrary to some people's opinion.
Some people's opinion.
Notable people. But I don't, the art, I can't say enough about what it's been doing for me.
Yeah. And the process of creation specifically.
Yeah. I want to have this moment. The rest of it is just an excuse.
Yeah.
It's not only an excuse. It's more than an excuse. There is an empathy that drives it. It's two parts to it, right? I want to have this experience. That's masturbatory, right? And then there's also a part that I want to connect, and I want to show myself bare, and I hope that it will touch other people. And so that, you know, I don't know. That's a...
Yeah, there's definitely that. I mean, when you play music live with other people, you sort of see that. Like, there'll be times where you almost step out for a moment. But just because you're not both creating at the same time, it doesn't mean there's no connection. In fact, there's still the connection between the person who's just listening and the person who's speaking, in a way.
Right, even in my mind, that it's being made to be consumed, now that invites the audience into the creation. Whereas if I was making it without an audience, then it would be just me making it.
Yeah, and now it's not just what the screen looks like, but it's about you connecting with the audience.
And in some ways, it takes away from my pleasure. Like, masturbation could be the most pleasurable, right? Because you could do whatever you want, and you don't have to care at all about what the people would resonate with. And this, you're almost making a sacrifice of that part of it. You still have to have pleasure. No one wants to be intimate with someone who's not getting any pleasure and is obsessed with the other party in the interaction. It'd be weird. But also, they do want someone who's there, who's not in their own head. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I was thinking of Eric's interview of a professional adult actress. Mm-hmm. And you sort of see that there also, right? Like, they take something that's generally viewed as just like a base human pleasure, but the actresses, at least the ones who enjoy it, are more obsessed with the creation. That's a greater pleasure than the pleasure of the thing itself. And so instead of, you know, just having pleasure on screen, what they're really doing is acting. And to them, that acting and connecting to the audience is a much greater feat.
And I think acting, if you're like a method actor, is you experience the pleasure. That would be the acting that appeals to me. If I heard that they felt cold inside and yet they were acting, that's harder. We kind of want to go back there, though, but...
Yeah, I agree though. Method acting has to be the way to go.
That's ground that okay. We've traversed, yeah.
The next one is super interesting that you paired them together, and I could see how they overlap, but it's maybe not as obvious as the other ones. And it's nature and play music.
Yeah. Just the same. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're both bringing yourself into the spiritual realm. And that's like the art made art released is a lot about like the human connection and creating a product for them. But then there's just going into nature brings you into another type of spiritual head, and playing music sort of does the same. And so I could see that.
Exactly. And there's no product there. And I think that's important also, right? That there's some amount where the experiences are real because they're being trained in a place of elsewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Business long. Does that mean like long-term thinking about business?
Yeah. So I have to, that area is weak. I have to figure out what the business pieces of that are, but that was the idea. And then I want it also to be business, like most agitating task, like those two, that one, you're thinking long-term, but two, you're in the weeds doing what you need to do.
Yeah. That sounds good. Like think long-term, but you also have to do a little actual implementation.
And now thinking about it, I should add like client conversation or something, customer service, like client facing is part of my work.
Yeah.
Because it's almost selfish. I was thinking about this, that I want to do this art, which no one even wants from me, you know, and no one has said that it's worth any amount of money. But then there are people who are willing to pay. But I claim I'm a sadi because I don't want to work with the people who want to pay me.
Yeah.
And I want to work with the people who don't want to pay me. But in reality, the Sadiq is going to say, all these people are here to pay me. Let me go above and beyond for them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And it's sort of like rotational. But just like, yes, maybe you speak to a customer every single day. You should also maybe like even all your employees, like I'm sure there are ones you interact with less frequently or less directly and still maybe also have a rotation for them. Like you call them with some consistency.
Yeah.
And then this way you're just like very connected to the business. In a more human connection type way,
something like that. Nice. And then exercise and supplements. I haven't really been having any supplements, yeah. So it's just been exercise.
Yeah, well, I guess that's because you don't know which supplements you want to have, if you want to have any.
Exactly. But I believe that I should be supplementing.
Yeah, you just have to find the right ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, lion's mane seems like an obvious one. I gotta just pull the trigger and order that, and fish oil also.
Yeah.
Those two are just like, it seems for sure.
Yeah, and again, like, oh, it's not natural, you know, but you got to go back to the man versus nature part of the conversation and realize that, like, not all of the ways that we want to feel are natural.
Yeah.
So that's the...
I like that the first day was colored, the rest weren't. I saw you got the colored pencils.
Yeah.
For them. And I also noticed that the first day of coloring was a marker. It doesn't look as nice. Colored pencil.
It's going to really be gorgeous.
Is a beautiful quality to it.
I'm very excited for the next pages that are going to be all colored pencil.
And I'm thinking maybe it's time I build out my theme system, my me system, the theme system.
Yeah. And I fill this out every night during Guard Beat when I count to Omer. So like it's part of my wind down part thing, which is great. And then I want to do in the morning journal. Always during the parts.
Nice.
So then that's
good.
That's the first half of the journal.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. And then I have the MarsKish.com. I think that was well needed.
Yeah, and it looks nice, that website. Check it out, MarsKish.com.
My Earth Day poem's on there if you want to read it. I've been using Instagram to house a lot of the things, but I feel like some people, first of all, aren't on Instagram. People's time on Instagram might be fractured. And also just like from my own, I wanted to live there. I think even more than, I think the audience will find it useful for it to live there.
Yeah. And it also, when you put stuff up there, it forces you to in some way be organized with your content that you might not be on your computer. And it's sort of a curation of like your best stuff. And so like it's sort of just building out a neat and organized folder structure for your stuff.
Yeah, I saw Rabbi Avi Harari send out like an Omer class he gave like 3 years ago. And I was like, oh yeah, that's the spot that you want to be in. Like it was 3 years old. They don't remember it so well. And yet it's still very, very important.
Yeah.
And boom, it's here. And now he's everywhere and he without even putting energy in today.
Uh-huh. And he knows it's there, right? He stayed on top of his stuff. He has some system where it's organized.
Yeah.
He knew how to find it.
Exactly. So I was impressed by that. That was part of what inspired me. And also realizing that, like, okay, so this is year one of, I've been creating for a long time and I haven't been releasing. And so, you know, that all that stuff kind of fell away, which I think is, I see a frozen, which I think is troubling.
Yeah.
All right, so check out the podcast.
And we'll put pictures, I guess, of the two pages of the journal somehow.
Yeah, and we'll maybe take clips of the first thing and put video out also, like, as leads for it. But yeah, this is, I think that's also the point, that this is a podcast. People like podcasts, listen to it in your podcast player, in Spotify.
Okay, pause for a second and shoof. Are they robbing the car?
I don't think so. You think so?
The alarm just went off.
Yeah, but it's probably their car.
It looks like it. Like, it doesn't look like it's a Syrian's car.
But we may be witnessing a robbery and not going to do anything about it.
Yeah. We're just sitting here talking about it.
All right. I banged and he left. Did he get scared away?
He walked away slowly. Does that mean it actually is a robbery, or he just doesn't like that we think it's a robbery? He's locked out of his own car.
Oh, he's going into his house. Yeah. Okay. He's going into the apartment. He was not a robber. Anyhow, back to the conversation. So this is a podcast. Listen to it in the podcast player on Spotify. We'll put it on, I think we should put it on Spotify.
Is it a separate stream, Spotify? They're not on Spotify right now.
They're not. We should. Okay, the season two should be on Spotify.
Yeah. Overcast pulls straight from Apple Podcasts, which is great.
Maybe Spotify can too. We just have to set it up. But like, I feel like podcasts are fun, people, because you could do your work, roll around your house. A lot of you don't have YouTube Red where you could shut the app.
Yeah.
You're chilling. You're chilling. Yeah. You're making lunch. You're eating lunch. What we're saying is not the most important stuff in the world. It's not a derasha. It's just a conversation that you could be involved in.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I hope you listen to this and have your own thoughts. And if you don't, and you're just zombie consuming it like Netflix, then it's just a waste of time.
Yeah, you keep saying that. Why? Do you think people zombie consume things? I mean, even when I was listening to Binge Mode Harry Potter, I was getting my own thoughts.
Yeah, that wasn't... I don't think Binge Mode Harry Potter, I was zombie consuming at all. I mean,
so I'm saying, who zombie consumes?
People do.
Do they?
I mean, I do it sometimes.
Like, I don't notice myself zombie consumed very often.
Well, that would be part of the zombie state.
Right. Something that you wouldn't notice. Like, I listened to Cortex on the way in, but it was a terrible episode. But that gave me a nice piece. It was a very sad 100th episode. I was so disappointed. That's what the show lacks at the end of the day, that it has, like, a certain spark to it. But then, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, they're what the spark is, that their systems are insane. But maybe they're like the humans there are not so good at expressing it. And like, the British one, I don't know their names.
Yeah,
the British one
is
supposed to be the host that pulls out the craziness of the American one.
Yeah.
And we see the beauty of the American one, but like, I think it can be pulled out more effectively.
Yeah. It became a lot about the British one, but the British one, we don't really like him.
No. And if anything, he's there to pull out the beauty of
the first episode showed that. That's why I like the first episodes. Those are really good.
And now he just takes it for granted.
Exactly. Like, it's about him as much as about the other guy, which is fair-ish. I don't know. Because he is impressive now in his own right. I think he has his own whole podcast thing and whatever. So
yeah, he's definitely an impressive figure.
He's just less interesting.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, if you don't know Cortex, it's a good podcast to check out, like the yearly theme episodes or something. We could post those at some point. And hopefully on my website also, I hope to put up things. One of the things that I want to do is cross-post. Like, it's not only supposed to be my voice. I want to show other things that I think that people should be looking at, you know, that I found useful, like the State app that I love.
Yeah. In a way, you want to, like, retweet things.
Yeah, I just want to retweet. Exactly. I just want to give you, like, a little trailer of it, enough to hook you. But people are surprisingly difficult to hook, I found.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
without putting pictures of foods.
Without pictures of foods, yeah. Yeah, without. Or, I mean, foods, I guess people know will bring them to exploding head of colors, so you don't need to show that. But, you either need to put pictures, a picture of food, or you need to put an ad of, you know, do this thing and it's going to get you all the woman in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. That's the only doorway for people, which is understandable. So maybe this should be a business podcast, how to make bank.
Yeah, we're gonna tell you how to make all the dollars in the world.
If you listen to this podcast, honestly, if you're listening to this, you are one of the few people in the world who care about your life. You are extremely impressive, and everyone else out there is just really listening to these podcasts in a complete haze, if they listen to anything at all, looking at pictures on the internet, and really just a complete waste of human life. So really, pat on the back to you for listening to this.
Yeah, pat on the back.
I genuinely believe it, honestly, also, so I don't even have to pretend.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, there are other podcasts that are good also, obviously. True. But yeah, a lot of the world is just wasting time, wasting human consciousness.
And that you would take an hour, if you consume any of the things and read a poem, you know, it's not immediately useful. Then yeah. Really, I do think it's a shout out. Because what's the real thing at the end of the day? Why won't people engage with it? Because they're just lazy? What is it?
I don't know why, but there's a block. There's a blockage, right? And it's sort of like...
They don't even see it.
They don't even see it.
They don't get upset at it. They just don't even see it.
But they can see it. Like, if you go to anyone and say, like, you only have, you know, an hour left to live, they're not going to spend that hour on Instagram. None of them will.
Right.
Unless, like, they're a blogger and they have an audience and they're speaking to the world. But no one's going to consume content on Instagram for the next hour or even for 10 minutes of their last hour. Whereas you might read a poem. You might listen to music. You might make music. And so we should try to really engage in activities like those more, and activities that we don't really care about less.
Right, you might spend 10 of the last hour with minutes with Sam Harris or something like that. You know, those are things that you could see yourself choosing to do. Yeah, maybe they would just go on and watch a quick episode of reality TV for the last hour.
No, that's horrible.
It could be.
I can't. If they do that, so sad.
It's a eat, drink, and be merry because tomorrow we die kind of thing. That's and this is it. I like this.
But it's not even merry. It's numb.
Yeah, so that's the thing. If you mistake alcohol for making you merry as opposed to making you numb.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it can make you merry. It just depends how you use it.
But that's what people that use, you know, the other things say, that when they realized about alcohol, that alcohol is just numb.
Yeah. Well, probably the way they used alcohol, given that they're now using other things.
Right, true. But fine, but that it could be described as numb, and we can mistake numb for merry, that there's some line there of just numb is better than what it feels like to feel.
Yeah.
Because there is, I get it. I don't know why numbing is so fun. Like, why I might want to just sit and watch numbing TV. I don't do it anymore because I just don't have time for it. I don't want to do it. I don't want that to be how I spend my time.
Yeah, exactly. If you only had an hour left, you wouldn't do that. And now, I mean, we have more than an hour left, but we only have so many hours left.
I like it. I play Xbox. I've done it before in my life. It's really fun. It's not even fun. It's just let everything go. It's almost refreshing. Meditative.
It's like you can finally let go of the burden for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the point of meditation, that you can always be free from the burden.
Without actually distracting yourself from it. That's the thing. Because the numb is, let me distract myself from the burden. Whereas the meditation is, let me be with the burden. And that's an even more enjoyable way of dealing with the issue of how hard it is to feel.
Yeah. I was actually thinking of that exact thing today. Like, if you find a flow state in action, you're sort of just distracting yourself in the type of way that you lose the sense of the burden. You lose the burden. But meditation instead turns the flashlight on the burden. It turns the flashlight on yourself. And then when you become free from the burden while you're aware of it, it is so much greater, so much more mind-blowing.
So we made a third category. There's numb, there's flow state, and then there's meditation. Is that how you split it?
I think the flow state is sort of numb in a way. Maybe it's a more positive take on numbingness.
I don't think so,
though. A flow state is sort of distraction.
I don't think so.
No.
Music is like speaking the pain, leaning into it, and giving voice to it.
Fair. Yeah.
So I don't see it as... even this, having this conversation, is let's go on the journey of the of where my mind is going already and not be afraid of it.
Okay, so there's numb, which is just ignoring the fact that there's any feeling in the world.
And present. And flow state is a form of presence.
And then there's...
is manipulating your presence. So like that would be like metta-bhavana meditation, which intends to bring you to a certain emotion on demand, and generally positive ones. And then there's ones that is sitting with what is. And then there could be ones where you go to a negative place on demand, like a stoic kind of meditation.
Yeah.
But some of it, watching movies is that, to a certain extent. That's why I wouldn't... there's something that's there.
Yeah, sometimes. It really depends on the movie, and it depends on how you watch it.
Yeah, I guess so. But if it's, I think that's why people like horror movies, that it shows, look, I could withstand this. And they go there emotionally, and they realize, oh, I'm capable of going there emotionally without the world ending. That seems like a valuable exercise.
Yeah.
It's almost a meditation.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, some of this reality TV, like you're watching the drama, and maybe it's like I recognize that I could be this dramatic in a certain sense, and I could look out at someone and then see the drama, experience the drama, have my own dramas being played out without actually playing them, without having to embody them and bring them into existence.
Yeah, and so maybe that's it, the fear to embody it on your own. Like you watch the horror movie to see scary things and overcome them. But really, instead, you should probably just take on something that's challenging and fail and overcome that too.
It becomes too fantastical.
And now whenever you want to feel like you overcame a challenge, you're going to go watch a horror movie. Whenever you want to feel drama, you're going to watch reality TV as opposed to letting your feelings come into your everyday life.
Yes, I've been trying in regards to Netflix. I've been trying to watch good movies. So I watched Goodfellas. I watched Inglourious Basterds. I watched Good Will Hunting, and then I watched Green Book. Those are the only things I've watched since the quarantine. So like just trying to be
strict. Yeah, that's a good selection.
Like if I'm going to watch something, I'm going to watch a good movie. I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to waste my life. I refuse to go into a TV show. I was saying this also is good. So late in the episode, all these gems. I feel like this is what people wanted to hear up front. The Netflix, you only get this to those who stayed around. I don't like TV because what is a TV episode's single goal?
To get you to watch the next one.
There you go. To get you to watch the next episode. So I'm not going to watch that then. It has only one goal, which means it wants to please me, which is good in a certain sense, right? That's audience-centric. It wants to please me, wants to tantalize me. But that means that the artists aren't trying to tell me anything that they care about. That's a complete sellout.
Yeah. Yeah, you shouldn't be trying to please me. You should be trying to tell me something important.
Show me something important that at the end I'm like, I don't want to watch this again at all.
Yeah. Hey, be willing to disagree with me. Be disagreeable, even if you're scared that I won't like it. We learn more from disagreement. We don't learn shit from someone agreeing with us and just like, oh, yeah, but, I agree. You're right. You're a genius.
Yes, a challenge, me. Happens to be Goodfellas. I feel like that movie's been ripped off, though, too many times for me to appreciate it properly as it was in its time. Like, Scorsese's great. The music's great. The thing's great. Okay, I got it all. But, like, the story, I didn't gain anything from it, honestly.
Okay, yeah. The Hendrix phenomenon. I've seen someone call it the Hendrix phenomenon on the internet recently.
It's been ripped off, so you can't appreciate it as much. Yeah. Like, it's a good... Also, it's a good story, but there's nothing at the end of it. There's nothing there. What? That as you chase this lifestyle that looks glorious, the problem is you think that you're above the law, and okay, we got it. I wasn't close to those corners of the world anyway.
Yeah.
So you have that. You had Good Will Hunting's great. I always love it. That's a great movie. I think that's such a good movie. And then Green Book. That's a good movie.
Yeah.
It's the story of a black musician going on tour of the South with a white driver who began to be a little racist and began to have his racism challenged and emerge as loving this black
man. I didn't watch Green Book yet, so I gotta watch that one. Been on my radar ish.
Just heart touching, soft, moving, and yet still teaches you.
Sounds great.
Unreal. Inglourious Basterds.
I didn't like it.
it's fun. Tarantino's great. The scenes, the tension. I think that's the whole theme of the movie, right? That every conversation goes like 3 minutes past. The Germans are almost toying with them. But then I don't like that the Germans don't win at the end. I think that's what bothers me.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why there's the two different plots to end things and they don't work but work. Like, I don't see anything in terms of how it all went down.
Yeah, I don't remember it so well.
The resolution, I guess, is my problem. I liked the pieces. He's great with pieces.
Yeah, but the story, you're saying, didn't mesh so well.
There was no theme that it was trying to hit. It was just like a superhero movie at the end.
Yeah.
Instead of telling me something. And he's this piece master. Like, he'll build a moment, and he's great. The moment's unreal. The set looks gorgeous. The conversation, the dialogue. He writes dialogue. Unbelievable, Tarantino.
Yeah.
But then, like, sometimes the movies lack that, like, okay, what is it? Where are you taking me? Why did you take me here?
But some of them do resolve well, and I think those are the ones I like. Like Django, that one resolved itself.
Better. I still think that the weakest part of that movie was the resolution.
Okay, yeah. And then I don't remember.
I'm going to watch the rest of him because he's a master, but I want to know which one is like the one where really there's something being said. And Scorsese, same story. He's a master. Like, I watched Silence.
Okay.
And that was incredible.
Wow. Okay.
About it was the Buddhists versus the Christians. Great. And I had a lot to say. There's a full.
No. Okay. I watched. I thought maybe I have watched Silence, but I don't think I have.
Yeah. Yeah. It was something good. And then what else do we have? So those are my movies. But I feel like if you watch a movie, try to challenge. And then I'm reading. But I'm reading real books. I'm trying. You know, like take a real book and sink my teeth into it.
Yeah.
Dama Bums is unbelievable. I called you after saying I wanted to go on a hike. Like, they climb and they're up there at this lake that no one ever sees because no one gets up there, and it's frigid, and they sit meditating for hours, these goons. I love them.
It sounds amazing. Yeah.
These guys are the best. Kerouac and the rest of the beatniks, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, it's funny that I think I might like the beatniks better than the hippies.
For sure. Everyone does.
Everyone does. Okay, yeah.
Because the beatniks were the OG of the movement, and then the hippies, like, took it and they started running with
politicized it. Politicized it, the hippies wanted to give the finger to society, and the beatniks just wanted to live.
Yeah, the beatniks are not angry in the slightest. There's no judgment even about society in any of Kerouac's books.
You do you, I do me.
Yeah, they don't judge society. They love it. They're just having time. They're just having a blast.
Yeah.
It's unreal. They're really great guys, and they're depressed, but like they're just trying to live the only way that they can, that they would be able to, and this is like what they want, and they're searching, and it's fun.
Yeah.
And there's cold nights where they lie outside with nothing and just ponder existence, and then they wake up and see the sun, and they're back, the gloriousness of existence, and they contact God, and it's just unreal. These guys are really take this one on the road.
Okay.
The Bible.
I'll take the physical copy. I got it on the Kindle, but maybe
it has the real names also, which you want. You don't want the fake names. The publishers made him change the names.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you didn't even have paragraph indentations. Like a lot of people don't like to read it in the published forum.
I think this is the original scroll. This is how he did it.
Oh, so maybe that was just like the introduction.
This is the scroll, but it's the real names. Cash Money. Inside the book. These are the real names. This is unreal.
Was it saving a page or something?
Nah, I don't know. Yeah, it's fun. I like reading on the Kindle too because you can take highlights and stuff. That's the best part.
Yeah, it doesn't highlight so easily, and I wish once you highlight it, like, it could show the highlighting color as opposed to just that thin underline.
Yeah.
Maybe I got to upgrade to the Kindle color.
Yeah, the Kindle's a weak device, all things considered.
Yeah.
Considering what it could be, I mean, it's a terrible device.
But it is amazing that I can read in bed at night without the light.
I could highlight and it could save my quote somewhere. At least it could do that. And you could read on the iPad with the Kindle app. It's fantastic. It's really their hardware that's the issue.
Yeah. I mean, it's both good and bad at the same time. Right, like I like that the screen is like that. I want the screen to be like that.
Right, but it should still be a little more touchy.
Yeah.
When you want to highlight and a little bit of an easier way to give notes, like maybe you could say the notes with your mouth.
Yeah.
This way, I mean, we know technology is here.
Yeah, it's actually not Amazon. It's the screen itself, which is made by E-Ink, the people that make the paper-like looking screen. And there are a lot of challenges with it. Like the reason it's not like a scrollable whatever computer, and the reason they haven't made a computer with it yet is because like the refresh rate is very slow. Like it what's going on your desktop right now, even in black and white, just can't really happen on the Kindle. Like everything just that's why you just flip a page. Like if you were,
I don't like the touchscreen. Do you have the buttons or the touchscreen for the skipping a page?
I have the buttons.
Much better. The touchscreen's terrible.
Yeah, I just hold it in my hand and I can just...
Oh, so my thing, yours isn't touchscreen.
No.
So I highlight by touchscreen. It's terrible.
Oh, that's terrible?
It's better than yours probably, but I hold on the first word in the sentence. It highlights it. Then you grab the end and drag it. But it's, when you're changing, when it's on two pages, it's going nuts.
Okay.
But it's good enough.
Yeah, with the buttons, it's like kind of annoying, but it works. It's just like, it's not as easy. It doesn't matter so much if the process is difficult as long as it's easy to start. So like you just put your finger to start highlighting. Whereas like I need to start like moving the cursor, press the button. You need to go to the button, press the cursor. So like to start highlighting is a pain.
But then my Kindle's giving me Tuma also. So you saw the ad. Oh, did you see? Are you on my story or not? So I've been posting the ads on my Instagram story. Three of the football players on the team are obsessed with me. One stalks me. One destroyed me. One stalks me. And one wants me. Like, it's playing to this girl's fantasy that there's these three guys who are obsessed with her, but she hates all of them. Some really, and every book is like that. The Secret Desire. I'm more worried. I don't understand anything about females, and I'm fairly concerned about males. But based on those ads, I'm even more concerned about females. And I
unless males are clicking on those ads, which is even more concerning.
Nah, females.
Because they know what books you're reading. They probably know you're a guy.
SarahKesri@gmail.com. She buys more of the books. And I don't think they're that smart because I bought Man Search for Meaning on my Kindle and they're clearly not smart.
Yeah.
And they're still showing me this stuff.
Yeah.
And they don't know who I am.
No.
Either they know who Sarah is on my account or they don't know who I am at all.
Okay.
Maybe it's the first. If that's who my wife is, though, that's kind of scary. That's who they think she is. Right. Exactly. I don't trust. They're not smart. They don't know who people are. So that's my takeaway, I hope. But yeah, we need, I think female leadership is even more urgently needed than male leadership. And male leadership is needed quite badly.
Yeah. It's within the female leadership sphere right now, like, I mean, maybe within the male leadership sphere also, but like the leaders, I want the leaders to tell the people, like, you can open up, you can feel there's joy and also sadness, which is beautiful in its own way when you feel it properly. And maybe I sort of feel like I'm getting that from male leadership, but like the female leadership just seems to say, like, you know, you need to be strong, you need to be protected, which is important. And maybe historically it's what women need to hear, but they also, like, you can... And maybe it's even more of a challenge for the woman, but you can open up and feel without being weak.
Yeah, and their feminine desires are still squirting out everywhere because these are still the books they read. So you can't be a feminist if you see these ads, right? So you know that they're trying to suppress this certain part about a female. And it might be that men did it. I don't know. And now it's squirting out, like, in the same way porn. Listen, it's not a man versus female. It's really a challenge with both. I was just saying that leadership, I for males, maybe I found the leadership, and I don't know what the female version of it is, and it probably exists.
Yeah.
But in the same way that the male leadership's having an issue reaching the people, the female leadership is having an issue reaching the people, and that's really, I think, the flaw is in the people more than in the leaders.
Yeah. It's tough, and the leaders they're doing their best to try to speak to the people, and still it's hard to reach them.
What an episode.
Yeah, I think it's been a good one.
This is a good one. This is a good one. We went everywhere. We went everywhere. We got the Netflix recommendations in, and we got the philosophy up front. We paid the toll.
Yeah.
All right. So we hope to be back for you soon. But for now, thanks for joining us for another episode of Cold Plunge.